have not shed its lining. It is lining worse than anything that I have ever seen. I drank 10 pints of beer and I cursed all the people there. I wished that all this rain would stop falling down on me.
Hello and welcome to Loika Mania episode 24. My name, of course, is Pat Loika, and today I'm going to be focusing solely on comics because there's a lot of comics that came out last week, and I'm going to try to get through some of my favorites, including some trades that came out as well. Seriously, last week was probably the biggest comic week in ages because there has been so much stuff. Mostly Marvel stuff, and it'll be reflected here in what I talk about, because most of the stuff I bought last week was Marvel books, and they're all really good though. So I was wowed by some of the stuff that came out. I don't know about you guys, but how many of you were spoiled of what happened in Fantastic Four? Me, I was spoiled because a friend of mine texted me early in the morning on that Tuesday. Of course, the text message contained the spoiler, so there goes my chance of seeing it unfold by myself. And it didn't help also right when I logged on to Facebook. There's few people who put status updates with regards to the book, and it also spoiled it. Excuse me. So, yeah. That got ruined for me quick. I can't really fault anyone over this whole spoiler thing, because in the end, Marvel is doing its thing because it wants to get more assets into stores, and at the same time, you can't really blame anyone. You know, it's one of those things, because it's nice that they're generating excitement for this thing, and ultimately, in comics and in for fans and all that, that's good, because you get the possibility of possibly gaining more people reading the stuff. But this whole thing really gets bothersome, and I'm talking to you, friends, those of you guys who text me with the spoilers, and those people texting me at 2 in the morning asking me for the spoilers. Well, read the book. Don't ask me about it. Don't tell me about it. Just read it. Seriously, it's kind of rude. I can live with it. It's one thing if the press spoiled me on it. I can live with that because, you know, I expected it to happen. I should have stayed off the internet or something. But if my own friends are texting me these spoilers, and my own friends are asking me more and all that stuff when I haven't even read the thing, because I didn't buy the book on Tuesday. I bought it on Wednesday when I was supposed to buy it, because I'm old school like that. You know what I mean? So, at any rate, I'll talk about that issue since we're already on it. Fantastic Four number 587 was probably one of the best things I've seen from Jonathan Hickman. What I loved about this particular storyline, Free, as it's known, is the fact that all the members of VFF were put in positions where they're basically in peril. So if you're actually just reading the book, and you're just reading along, and you're not trying to figure anything out, you can kind of see that they're all in deep shit. You know, for lack of a better term, they're all in deep shit. Reed is in New Earth with Galactus and the Silver Surfer. Sue is in is under the water with Namor and the old Atlanteans. Ben Grimm stuck in human form, and he's with Johnny Storm, who's still the Human Torch, of course, and they are facing down like a new annihilation wave. So each issue has had a great cliffhanger where you just don't know, you can't tell for sure what's going to happen, because they're stuck in really credible, threatening situations. And I thought that was really cool. And Hickman continues to build off of each issue until he finally builds up to the crescendo that is in 587. Man, that is such a great finale. I was honestly touched by the story. I thought it was really well done. It was emotionally, it packed a really strong punch emotionally. So, you know, kudos to Mr. Hickman and Ms. Repting and the rest of the creative team. They have crafted a very, very good, very memorable tale. Yeah, death in comics, it's kind of played out, people will say. And I kind of agree on it, but they do it really well here. And when the person dies, when you get to the page where you find where he dies, there's like a page that follows that's just really powerful because of the silence in that page. And I don't want to ruin anything else. I don't want to accidentally ruin it, so I'm going to move along now. But yes, it's a wonderful, wonderful book, and I hope you read it. I know there's a lot of hype, and don't give in to that. Just read the book because you're interested, because it's a well-written story. That Fantastic Four, I've never been this big of a fan of, but this is just amazing. Next book I want to get into is Age of X Alpha number 1. Now, the Age of X is a it's an alternate reality type of story where, similar to the Age of Apocalypse, but here nobody formed the X-Men, and you know the human mutant situation just got really bad really quick. There are several catalyst events, of course, like the Awakening of the Phoenix, which is mentioned. And there are all kinds of stuff online. I would suggest that you Google some of this stuff and look up Marvel.com, because there's some really, really cool alternate history stuff that's being shown and shows you what happened to people. Definitely give it a look. And with regards to this particular issue, we are introduced to the entire cast of characters. This is, by the way, written by Mike Carey, with most of the art by Mirko Pierfederici, and some chapters illustrated by Gabriela Hernandez-Walza, Carlo Barberi, Paco Diaz, and Paul Davidson. These are really cool introductions to the characters. I'm really the most excited. The character I think is a standout is Basilisk, which is basically this reality's version of Cyclops. It's Scott Summers, and he has one hell of a screwed up past. Probably the most. It's pretty bad. At the same time, it's really sad. You know, basically he was. Well, I'm not going to spoil it. Why am I doing that? If you really want spoilers, you can look it up online on or just buy the book, because the book is good. We basically get backstories here for Basilisk, Cannonball and Husk, Wolverine, and Magneto. And I really enjoyed all of their backstories. I think Cannonball seems to have become a... I guess more of a leader type here in this reality, and he's great. We see more on people like Dr. Rao and Dazzler and a few others. The Wolverine story itself is actually kind of cool. I'm not, again, no spoilers for me on this one, because there's too much here. But there's a lot of really cool alternate history stuff here. Lots of great takes on familiar characters, and it's just it's really well done. I think Mike Carey really outdid himself here. He has created such a, I would say, it's very, very, it's such a fully realized universe just by reading this, because of a lot of the backstories here, a lot of the way things are connected, and it's pretty extensive for a mini event that takes place over the course of 3 months. I say pick it up. It's the art's really cool. I mean, the story's great, and it's really, really a good introduction. You know, if you want to try out if you're reading X-Men Legacy or New Mutants, and you'll realize the next month that the book all of a sudden just took a completely different turn, it's because of this. And this is kind of a primer to tell you why you're reading that story that you're reading in those books now. So give this a shot. You know, it's a very small event. It takes up about 6-7 issues of main story and about 2 tie-in issues, and that's it. You know, it's fairly simple. So do yourself a favor and pick it up. Once again, it's called Age of X Alpha, issue 1. Next, we have Chaos War, issue 5. This is the final issue of the story by Greg Pak, Fred Van Lente, and Koi Pham, with inks by Tom Palmer. And, man, heck of a story here. I mean, this is, I mean, for one thing, this has given us some of Koi Pham's best work. You know, it's the God Squad taking on the, you know, Mikaboshi, the Chaos King. And, you know, in the end, I mean, again, I don't want to spoil anything, but this has a heck of an ending that's going to affect everything. For one thing, certain people have been returned to us, and for another, it launches a new series, and this is, you know, basically the end of the Incredible Hercules saga, or you know, if you were to count it in trades, this is a fine. This is like the eighth trade or eighth hardcover or whatever you want to call it. It's kind of sad because it feels like the end of an era. Lots of the Chaos War or the pack of Van Lente trademarks are here, like the wacky sound effects and all that stuff. It's just, I don't know, I feel really sad that this is over. I'm sure there's going to be a new series coming up, and I'm sure it's going to be good, but I don't know if it's going to be as going to be the same as this. But then again, it's the same writer, so who knows? It'll probably be okay. But, I don't know, there's just something about this particular era of Hercules stories that I loved, and, you know, the character really, really gained a lot in the last 3 or 4 years since World War Hulk ended. So, pick up Chaos War number 5. It's good. It's Pak, Van Lente, and Pham. You know, the guys that started Incredible Hercules, and now they're putting an end to that story here. I think the only thing I'm not too fond of is the cover, to be quite honest with you, but I'm not going to spend too much time on that. So pick it up. It's worth your time. Next up is Thunderbolts number 152, and it's by, you know, Jeff Parker, Kev Walker, and colors by Frank Martin, and again, more great developments. This kind of ties into what Jeff Parker's doing with Hulk. You know, we get to utilize the new team member Hyperion, and man, Kev Walker, I think, draws the best Juggernaut. I don't know, there's something about the way he draws that dude, and he just draws him so big and so bulky. It just looks right, and I really love the new Mach 5 suit under his pencils, because it's just badass looking. I've been loving Thunderbolts for the longest time. This is one of those books that never ever gets old to me, and you know, I've been with this since issue 1, and I think Jeff Parker is really doing one of the most enjoyable runs on this book that I've ever read. So, yeah, just pick it up. I don't want to ruin it, but, you know, it's Thunderbolts fighting giant monsters. That's all you need to know, and really, that should be enough to sell you on it. And there's also some developments with another character that may be up to something. And that much I will say, I'm not going to tell you which character that is. So, yeah, give it a look. And despite the rather constipated Luke Cage on the cover, it's actually a pretty fun issue. So, yeah, Thunderbolts 152, pick it up. And the next book on my agenda is Magneto number 1. It's a one-shot. It's illustrated by Howard Chaykin, and I believe he writes it as well. Yes, he writes and draws it. It's colored by Edgar Delgado. It's a pretty cool little story. I think this will fit within continuity as well, or maybe not. Who knows? But I think it works. It's basically Magneto when he first goes to the U.S. and among other things, you learn the origin of his costume. You see some of the first things he's ever done when he sets foot on U.S. soil after. After all the stuff he goes through overseas, they make mention of stuff about him having like an accent because he just moved to the U.S. It's actually a really cool story. It's fun. It's very lighthearted, actually, and this is, you know, and It's greatly enjoyable. It kind of makes you even more sad that he became a villain, you know, because this character is very likable, very, very enjoyable, you know. It's such a departure from Magneto that we all know, the very intense Magneto we've known, that. Again, it makes you wonder what would have happened if he had become a hero in the first place and not engage the humans in the way he has. It's lighthearted. It's a one shot. It's one of those things where you could definitely do away with it or pick it up, and either way, it's not going to be affecting you too much. It's a lot of fun. I recommend it. Your mileage may vary, but I think it's well worth it. It's by Howard Chicken, and I will buy anything by Howard Chicken to begin with. So, there. Next up is Captain America 614. This is the continuation of the trial of Captain America, and it's actually really picking up now. Things are getting bad for everyone involved here, except maybe the new Red Skull. And in the end of it, we get to the big F yeah moment of this story when we get to the end of this particular issue. So it's great. The trial itself has been very interesting because of the way, you know, it's like a very legal, in a very legal situation. It's funny to see how some of the stuff we've read over the last few years in this book unfolds because of the way they talk about it. Ed Brubaker and, of course, a bunch of guys and Stefano Gidiano, really, really, they're fantastic. And I realize also there are multiple inkers in this thing. And I imagine, of course, they had a rather tight deadline because, among other things, besides Stefano Gaudiano, this book has Mark Morales, Tom Palmer, Rick Magyar, Mike Perkins, and Butch Geiss inking. So I don't know exactly what happened, and I don't know why they slowed down to the point where they had to do this. But you can really tell that they have multiple inkers here. And to their credit, though, like, you can't really tell who's doing what because Butch Geiss's style really stands out regardless of who's inking it. But there are moments where you kind of see that there might be someone else different involved because of the way some people are drawn or inked, particularly Dr. Faustus, because he appears here. There's something about the way he's inked in the pages of the trial. It feels different than what I'm used to, but it's all good. We have multiple colorists here as well, and again, it looks like it's a division of labor because of a deadline, but it doesn't matter. Colorists include Betty Breitweiser, Chris Sotomayor, I think it's Laura Martin, and someone whose last name is Ramos, and I wish I could remember who it was exactly. But yeah, overall, it's a great story. You know, again, it moves the plot forward. It moves all the characters into their places, and it really, really puts you in a. And again, another intense cliffhanger, which is what Ed Brubaker does best. I think this new Red Skull, formerly known as Sin, you know, this Red Skull's daughter. I think she's coming into her own in the role. She's becoming very formidable, based on what happens here and her dealings with the Master Man, of course. This should be very interesting, and I really can't wait to see how this unfolds. It's a really good story, and how this will lead into Fear itself should be pretty exciting as well. Next up is Uncanny X-Men number 532 by Matt Fraction and Kieron Gillen with Greg Land, Jay Leiston, and Justin Ponser. This is actually a really, really good effort from Greg Land. I have been extremely critical of him, as most of you know, and I think this is a good effort on his part. I really enjoyed the issue. again, we continue on what's going on with Phantom X, Kitty Pryde, Sebastian Shaw, and Emma Frost in one end, and then we have the fake X-Men, and then we have the collective man story as well. There's a lot of plot points that are slowly coming together, and of course, there's the X-Men's PR, or their PR lady, basically taking care of business about the so-called mutant plague that's currently affecting people on Utopia. There's a lot of good stuff here, lots of great character stuff, lots of fun little moments as well. So it's a typical X-Men issue, as it has been for the last couple of years. I enjoyed the characters. I enjoyed the interactions particularly between Emma Frost, Sebastian Shaw, Phantom X, and Kitty Pryde, because Kitty is such a different character from these other people, and I like the way people are reacting off of her, particularly Phantom X. And of course, seeing Emma and Kitty together again is always fun, because those two have a unique relationship, to say the least. The Collective Man, I would like to know what turned the Collective Man into this villain. Because he's the main antagonist of the main story here in San Francisco, at least. And I remember he was a hero, so I would it'd be interesting to find out how he ended up here and why he became this way. But it's very, I like the way they use him. I think it's very clever the way they use his powers too. And I really like this X-Men, this away team that the X-Men have that are in San Francisco. Storm, Angel, Dazzler, Pixie, and Northstar. I think they're a great team. I think, that I would like to see more of that squad operating, because they have a really, really cool chemistry, a cool power set, and I think they're also very PR friendly as far as the looks go. I think they can bring a lot to the table, basically. I'm looking forward to more of them. And that should be it. I mean, pick up Uncanny X-Men. It's been so much fun lately, especially since the quarantine storyline started. I think this is going to be one of... this is something that's going to turn out to be memorable. Then next is New Avengers number 8 by Michael Bendis and Daniel Acuna. And this is basically a date issue between Jessica Jones and Luke Cage. And they talk for a bit, which is, it's a date issue. And there's even some action in this book, which is pretty cool, because lots of people like to complain about Brian Michael Bendis and his work and how, it's wordy and nothing happens. Well, you get a little bit of everything here. I mean, a Bendis junkie like me who loves the talky stuff gets a lot of that here. And then there's even action and some of the most beautiful Daniel Acuna art I've seen. That man draws an amazing Doctor Doom, and I'm not spoiling anything because you see him in the cover of the issue anyway. But he draws a great Doctor Doom. I would like to see more of that. Really, really fun stuff here. And then we Jessica Jones makes a decision about her future here that I think a lot of old school Jessica Jones fans will enjoy. Check it out, New Avengers number 8, more of the same goodness by Brian Michael Bendis and with Daniel Acuna. Speaking of Bendis, though, the next book is his other Avengers book, Avengers issue 9, and he is of course joined by John Romita Jr., Klaus Janson, Scott Hanna, and Tom Palmer. All-star team of inkers here, all-star team of legendary inkers, actually, if you look at that. And it is a fantastic book. It is, of course, the continuation of the Hood's quest to reform the Infinity Gauntlet. And in this issue, I will not spoil anything, but if you've read last issue, you kind of know what's going to happen here. And I think that's pretty obvious. If you've read the issue before this, you know that Tony Stark is in big trouble, among many other things. But, all the secrets, all the lies, and the whole Illuminati thing, it all comes to a head in this issue. And while this is mostly a talk issue and more of a, I would say, backstory type of issue, It is a beautiful looking book. The many inkers involved here really bring the best out of John Romita Jr. There are many pages in this book that I absolutely thought were gorgeous, and some of the cleanest and some of the nicest looking John Romita Jr. pages I've seen in a long time. And don't get me wrong, I love Klaus Janson. I think he's the perfect complement to John Romita Jr. But some of the Scott Hanna and the Tom Palmer pages, I mean, you could tell when it's them. There is a certain... when Tom Palmer inks someone, you can definitely tell because he brings a lot of himself into it. The scratchier lines are cleaned up quite a bit. And, his stuff retains a personality. Like, there are pages, I think more towards the end, that you could tell are Tom Palmer pages. And, more towards the middle, you realize that you're looking at Scott Hanna's inks too. There's a lot of stuff. I think the prison scenes actually look like they're by Tom Palmer, just because there's a certain weight to his line work. Just looking at the guys that the Hood interacts with in the prison scenes, for example, you could see that it's him. You could also see in the scenes with Madame Mask and the Hood that, you know, there is that smoothness, that there's that thickness of line that only Tom Palmer does. And not entirely sure which one Scott Hanna himself inked, but, you know, his style really, he doesn't really get in the way of the artist much himself. And you could also see, you know, he has a lighter touch. I mean, he, much like Klaus Janson, I think he gives in to John Romita Jr.'s work a little more, but at the same time there's a clarity to his line there's a smoothness to it, you know. It's really nice to see other people inking John Romita Jr. stuff. I wouldn't mind seeing more of it, but I would love to see Tom Palmer do more with him, considering they teamed up on Kick-Ass. I think that explains why some of the pages look the way they do. Overall, though, the issue was really good. We get to see how the Hood got started on his quest. We get to see the repercussions of all the past few years repercussions of some Iron Man and certain people's activities have affected everyone else. So it's definitely worth picking up, if only for that. And I'm pretty sure when his quest continues next month, we'll see more of the big action set piece stuff that we know this Avengers book to be good at. So pick this up. It's a lot of good backstory. It's a nice break in the action, and you'll probably learn a thing or two. It's got some beautiful inking too. I think David Price would agree to that. So yeah, Avengers number 9, buy it. Finally, my single issue pick of the week is Uncanny X-Force number 4. This is, of course, by Rick Remender, with art by Jerome Pena, with colors by Dean White. Beautiful cover by Esad Rebic, which pretty much tells you what's going to happen in the book. The new X-Force encounters, they encounter a stalemate because they finally get to Apocalypse, and it's not what they were expecting. And the intense confrontation between the members of X-Force is really what makes this book great, because they had set out to go on this quest because they want to eliminate the threat before it becomes a threat. But the thing is, they didn't realize how much of a non-threat their target is. And so we have a big confrontation, which is pretty much all I will say, because I'm not going to spoil it for you. But they get to that point where it gets really complicated for all of them. And of course, things happen that you just do not expect. I can't say enough how much I love Jerome Pena's work. I have been loving his work since his Fear Agent days, and I followed him on to The Punisher and to Moon Knight, and now here. And this, I think he was born to draw this book. And of course, Rick Remender, I love the fact that he's got the characters really nailed down. Deadpool's humor And Phantom XS2 actually really helped save this book from becoming a very very depressing read. And that, you know, and of course the three established X-Men characters that we know, Warren, Betsy, and Logan, all their personalities really came through. All of their problems, everything what's great about the characters really came out here. And despite the fact that it's called X-Force, because there's a stigma attached to the team name X-Force that it's just a heavy action, no brains, no characterization type of thing is what people would like to think about X-Force, because the '90s and that name really didn't do them any favors. But my God, this is such a great book. Characters are fully realized here. And the art's just amazing. I can't say enough about the art. I don't want to ruin anything because this is such a good story. This is such a special story. I think you should read it, and you should not be spoiled of it. I can live with being spoiled on the other book, on Fantastic Four. But this book, if this one was spoiled for me, I would have been really mad, because this was the ending was special, and the ending was something that makes you think. So give this a look. Once again, Uncanny X-Force number 4 by Rick Remender, Jerome Pena, and Dean White. This is the end of the first storyline. You can expect a trade or hardcover to come out soon. So if you missed out on the first three issues, you have that. The next storyline should be a lot of fun. It's guest illustrated by cover artist Esad Ribic. And it's such a fun thing. And I hope to God people buy this book and support it, because it's worth it. So, yeah, Uncanny X-Force. Support it. It's great. And to round off all this Marvel talk, I'm going to talk about some trades that I picked up. And this is going to be pretty much an indie-centric set of trades, just because a lot of good indie trades came out this week. Have you heard of Sean Murphy? Yes? You probably heard of him because of Joe the Barbarian or his Hellblazer covers. Well, you're in luck, because his very first work, Off-Road, has been re-released by IDW. And this original graphic novel, which first came out under Oni, is something you should look out for, because this is where we got to witness the brilliance that is Sean Murphy. And I already have the original release from Oni, but I had to pick up this in the re-release, just because I think IDW does some of the best looking collections, and so often it's a bit larger than the original version of the book. It's such a fun comic. It's a fun book about three friends in high school who reunite, and they just have some bad luck. They've had some bad luck, so they go off-roading, and it just unfolds from there. I mean, it's a nice buddy comedy book that I think people should enjoy. It's worth it for the art alone, but man, it's just a very nice, likable cast of characters. So give that a look. Another book I got is The Killer Volume 3, Modus Vivendi, which is the third volume of the Wonderful Killer series. It's by Jacquemin and Matz, and I'm happy to see that this book is still coming out. I didn't know, because I was led to believe that the second volume was the last, and I'm glad I was wrong. And this is, of course, another caper involving our assassin. And among other things, the art by Luc Jacquemin is just stunning, and this takes place like 4 years after the last book, I believe, and it takes place in Venezuela, and basically our guy goes back into the game. It's a freelance gig. It's such a... I really love reading this book, because it puts you in the head of the character, And he is a fascinating person. You know, his beliefs, his reasons for what he for doing what he does. It's always so interesting to see because he is he has always been a fascinating character, and being able to read more of his stuff, more of his point of view on everything has always been great. So check out The Killer Volume 3, and if you haven't picked up the first two, pick them up. It's from Archaea. This book just came out too, so it's 176 pages. Really, really good looking book. If anything, you can pick it up for the art and be satisfied, but there's so much more to it than that. So, yeah, give that a look. And the last book I will talk about is the first volume of Top Cow's Artifacts by Ron Mars and Michael Brissard. This is a wonderful book. It's Top Cow's big event book. And the way I see it, it's such an accessible book, such an easy book to get into that you don't need to have read anything from Top Cow before this. All you need to know is this. Sarah Pizzini and Jackie Estacado, you know, Sarah's the bearer of the Witchblade, and Jackie is the the master of the darkness. They had a kid, and someone takes their child, and it's become a quest, you know, among all these factions to retrieve all these artifacts that, you know, obviously get you control over everything. So it's very interesting. It's such a fun story. It's easy to get into because you don't need to know anything about any of these characters, and you can just jump into the story. The art is wonderful. Michael Brissard has really grown as an artist since he started on the Darkness, and I think he just keeps getting better and better. And I think he's going to be a huge one day I think he's big time right now, honestly, just looking at his work here. But sooner or later, people are going to start taking notice, and people will be trying to snap this guy up for work because he's really good. And Ron Mars, of course, he's been writing Top Cow stuff for years now, and this is probably some of his best, most enjoyable work, I think. So give this book a try. I know it's unfortunate that there's always been a stigma attached to Top Cow because it's Top Cow, but they've been doing such good, really fun, really enjoyable books in the last few years. They deserve a shot because they do good work. So it's once again, it's called Artifacts. This is the first volume. It's from Top Cow. This should actually catch you up right before the newer issues start coming out, because I think they took a little break. Yeah, pick it up, man. It's Artifacts. It's great. It's Top Cow. It's Ron Mars and Michael Brissard. You will not regret this. And that should be it for me this week. I hope you guys were able to handle my rambling all this time. It's almost 40 minutes in, and there's just a lot of stuff that came out, and I have a lot of things to say about the books that came out. I've been very pleased with all of them, and I have I've always. It kind of hurt the wallet to buy all this stuff. It was really cool to come home with a nice big pile of comics and just read them, you know. And it's even better when it's all the books that you're expecting or really looking forward to. I mean, all these books are some of my favorites, you know. The Avengers books, the X-Men books, I love all of them. And having them all come out in the same week was kind of a treat because it's like Christmas. And of course, you add all these other trades in, and then that's not even all the trades I got in the last week. You know, there's so much. There's a few others I pre-ordered and all that. So, you know, it's all good. It's expensive, but it's great. It's I was very entertained. I had a good time reading, and I wish more. I wish they kind of spaced out the way the books released, to be quite honest with you, but it's all good. I enjoy them. Anyway, I'll be back next week with more comic talk, and I'll probably have someone to talk to next week because I'm pretty sure you're getting tired of hearing me all by myself. So I will probably have a guest next week, and we will talk about comics. And I kind of want to get into the whole Oscar movie thing before we embark on our annual Oscar movie marathon. So that should be it. If you have any questions or comments or concerns, send me an email to veloika@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/patloika, or friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/patloika. And among other things, I uploaded my entire art collection on Facebook. So if you want to check out my collection of sketches and original comic pages, it's all on Facebook. Or on Flickr at flickr.com/photos/patloika. Yeah, that's a lot of URLs to remember, but they're pretty easy because they all end with my name. So that's it. Until next week, you guys have fun, enjoy your comic books, and take it easy.
So I sent him to the war. Very well gone away. There's nothing left to say. We're Staunch and Joe and an Aaron Gorm. My love's in America. The calling of the rosary. Spanish wine from far away. I'm a free-born man of the USA. Love you, I always did, I always will. Very well gone away. There's nothing left to say. But say adieu to your eyes as blue as the water in the bay. To Big Jim Dwyer, a man of war, who was up and heard to say.